Okay, let's unpack this. When we think about biology, our minds often jump straight to the high-energy dynamic world of animals, mm-hmm. right? Maybe even the incredibly complex human body.
Mm-hmm.
We marvel at the intricate mechanics of, say, a favorite video game, you know, the way a character's abilities are woven into its design, or how a vast in-game economy functions.
Sure, those complex systems.
Exactly. But what about the silent architects of our world, the plants? They don't sprint across landscapes or possess beating hearts like we do, yet their biological complexity is, well, it's truly astounding.
It really is, often underestimated.
So today we're taking a deep dive into something that might seem a little outside the immediate scope of human anatomy, plant form and function. You might be asking, why does this matter for someone like me who's getting ready for medical program admissions focused on healing humans?
That's a crucial question, yeah. And what's fascinating here is that at its core, plant biology, especially plant form and function, it shares fundamental principles with every other living system, mm-hmm. including the human body. Understanding how plants organize themselves, you know, from the cellular level up to complex systems, how they grow, transport vital resources, adapt to their environment, basically, how they solve their unique biological problems. It provides foundational understanding of universal biological logic.
Ah, I see. So it's about the underlying principles.
Exactly. This perspective is incredibly valuable for any aspiring medic. Think of it like mastering the core physics engine or the underlying mechanics of a game before you specialize in a particular character build or strategy.
Right. Makes sense.
The principles of structure dictating function, of energy transfer, of communication within a biological system, these apply universally whether you're looking at a towering redwood or a human neuron.
So our mission today is to sort of peel back the layers, uncover the power-ups and skill trees of plants, breaking down their anatomy and physiology.
Mm-hmm. Using the source material as our guide.
Yep. We'll use your source material, Chapter 5, Plant Form and Function, as our guide to pinpoint the essential nuggets of knowledge. Get ready to see plants through a whole new lens, one that connects directly to the intricate, complex systems you'll undoubtedly encounter in medicine.
We'll explore how these seemingly static organisms perform incredible feats of survival and growth.
And we'll keep it engaging, like discovering a new strategy in your favorite game. All right, before we dig into the specifics of plant anatomy, let's quickly remember the universal rules of the game for all living things. Your source reminds us of the characteristics of life. Now, from first glance, plants seem so different from us. How do these seemingly passive players, these quiet architects, truly fulfill all these fundamental criteria?
It's true, their playstyle is distinct, isn't it? But plants unequivocally demonstrate all these characteristics, often in, well, surprising ways. They are highly organized structures.
Okay, organized how?
From the precise arrangement of molecules within their cellulose cell walls, to the intricate internal architecture of their leaves and roots, this organization extends from the cellular level right up to complex organ systems.
Right.
They certainly reproduce, whether sexually through seed dispersal after pollination or, you know, asexually, like when a new plant sprouts from a runner or a cutting.
Right.
Genetically identical.
Okay. Reproduction, check.
Plants also undergo dramatic growth and development. I mean, starting as a tiny seed and transforming into a mature organism, changing significantly in size, shape, complexity over time.
Huge changes, yeah.
And while they don't consume food like animals do, they absolutely perform cellular respiration. They break down the carbohydrates they make through photosynthesis to release ATP, their fundamental energy currency. That powers everything inside.
So they're not just passively sitting there. They're actively managing their internal chemistry. What about the other characteristics? Waste. Response.
Precisely. Plants actively excrete waste products of their metabolism, often by storing them in vacuoles or even shedding leaves. They dynamically respond to stimuli from their environment.
Like bending towards light.
Exactly. Phototropism. Or gravitropism, where roots grow downwards. These aren't random movements. They're finely tuned biological responses, vital for survival.
Makes sense.
And there's significant internal movement of substances within their cells, organelles, and throughout their specialized vascular system, even if the whole organism isn't, you know, walking around.
Internal logistics.
Right. They also rigorously maintain homeostasis, regulating internal conditions like water potential, temperature, nutrient balance, crucial for enzyme function, cellular health.
Keeping everything stable inside.
And finally, perhaps most profoundly, plants, like all life, are capable of evolution. They undergo gradual genetic and phenotypic changes over countless generations, adapting to diverse and ever-shifting environments.
Oh, okay, they really do tick all the boxes.
They do. So if life were an RPG, plants represent a unique class or race with a specific skill set, stationary, autotrophic, relying on photosynthesis, but they follow all the core rules of character creation and progression. They've got their own unique stats and abilities, like their amazing photosynthetic machinery and complex root systems that let them thrive.
That paints a much more active picture. So within these universal rules, how do plants specifically operate? Your source places them squarely in the kingdom Plantae. What defines this particular faction in the biological world, setting them apart?
Well, the source highlights several key defining features. Firstly, they are multicellular eukaryotic organisms.
Meaning complex cells with a nucleus.
Exactly. Their cells possess a true nucleus enclosing their genetic material and a suite of specialized membrane-bound organelles like mitochondria and chloroplasts, each doing distinct jobs. Think of it like a fully upgraded base in a strategy game with specialized rooms, power plant, research lab, you name it.
Gotcha.
A defining characteristic really unique to plants is their reliance on photosynthesis. They're autotrophs.
Meaning they make their own food.
Right. They can craft their own food, converting light energy, CO2 from the air, and water into complex carbohydrates. This is a huge contrast to animals, us. We're heterotrophs. We have to find and eat our food.
So plants are the ultimate self-sufficient resource generators.
Pretty much, like characters with a gathering or resource node ability. And distinctively, their cells are fortified with cellulose cell walls.
Ah, the rigid wall.
Yeah, think of it as strong, rigid outer armor for each cell. It provides robust structural support and protection, a sort of fortification for the plant's base that lets them maintain shape, withstand turgor pressure, unlike our flexible animal cells.
Which is crucial if you're just standing there needing to grow upwards.
Exactly. Crucial given their stationary lifestyle. It allows them to grow tall, resist gravity, all without a skeleton.
That makes perfect sense. Now let's get into the main hardware of a plant, its fundamental architecture. Your source describes their basic structure as two interconnected systems, the root system and the shoot system. It's almost like two specialized halves of a powerful machine, right? Each with a very specific job.
Precisely. These two systems are a brilliant evolutionary adaptation. They allow plants to simultaneously tap into resources from both above and below ground.
A two-pronged attack on resources.
You could say that. The root system is typically underground, providing vital anchorage crucial for stability against wind, water erosion, and it's expertly designed for absorbing water and essential mineral ions from the soil.
So the resource extraction unit and foundation anchor.
Exactly. Right. Constantly working underground to secure the plant and draw in vital stuff. Beyond absorption, it also serves as a crucial storage facility for food compounds, carbs, and other energy reserves made by the shoot. Holds on to excess energy for later, maybe during winter or for a growth spurt.
Okay, so roots handle the underground.
Okay.
And above ground.
Above ground, the shoot system is perfectly optimized to gather light for photosynthesis and capture CO2 from the atmosphere. It's the plant's solar array and gas exchange network.
Makes sense.
Critically, these two systems are seamlessly connected by a highly efficient vascular system. This intricate network acts as the plant's internal logistics network or supply lines.
Ah, moving things between the roots and shoots.
Exactly. Ensuring efficient bidirectional transport of water, minerals, and the food compounds made during photosynthesis between the extraction zone below ground and the production zone above. Without this robust internal transport, a large, complex plant just couldn't exist.
So to sum up the analogy.
Yeah, the root system is your deep digging mining operation, always extending its reach underground for water and minerals while also anchoring your fortress, the whole plant. Some roots are like storage chests for energy.
Right.
The shoot system is like the solar panels and air scrubbers of your base, collecting sunlight, energy, and CO2. And the vascular system, that's the sophisticated conveyor belt system or transport tubes, moving all these essentials, water, minerals, sugars between mining, solar panels, storage, making sure every part of the base gets what it needs, top to bottom.
That really clarifies the division of labor. Let's zoom in on the shoot system then, starting with the leaves. What are these solar panels primarily designed for, and how do they manage that delicate balance of getting CO2 in without losing too much water?
Leaves are truly masterpieces of biological engineering, yeah. They're the plant's primary sites of photosynthesis. The blade, the flat, broad part, it's exquisitely structured to maximize light capture.
How so?
It's packed with specialized parenchyma cells called mesophyll, densely filled with chloroplasts, the organelles where photosynthesis actually happens. Think about optimizing a solar farm for maximum energy. You'd want panels wide, thin, angled optimally. That's the leaf blade.
And some leaves do other things, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Some show remarkable adaptations, functioning as specialized utility modes. Sharp spines deter herbivores. Tendrils help climbing plants grab on and reach for light.
Cool. And the stalk connecting the leaf.
Right. The petiole. It acts like a flexible mounting arm or a connector cable. Positions the blade optimally for sunlight, maybe letting it track the sun a bit. More critically, it connects the blade directly to the stem's power grid, the vascular bundles ensuring water flows in and sugars flow out seamlessly.
Okay, and what about those tiny pores you mentioned, the gas exchange part?
Ah, the stomata. Tiny, microscopic pores, usually on the underside of the leaf, flanked by a pair of specialized guard cells. They aren't just simple holes. They're the plant's critical ventilation and water regulation gates.
Gates for CO2 in, water out.
Exactly. They open to let CO2 in for photosynthesis, the essential raw material for making sugar, but they also close to control water loss through transpiration, which is water evaporating from the leaf surface. This is a crucial resource management feature.
So the guard cells control the gates.
Precisely. They're like the smart sensors responding to light, CO2 levels, water availability. They allow the plant to balance getting carbon with conserving water, especially when it's dry. If they stayed open all the time, the plant would dry out fast.
So leaves, power generators, atmospheric regulators. What about the stem, the central pillar of the shoot system? Seems like it does two big jobs. Support and transport?
Absolutely. The stem is much more than just passive support. It's a dynamic, multifunctional organ. Its primary role is mechanical support, keeping leaves and flowers upright, extended towards the light, crucial for photosynthesis and reproduction.
Holding everything up.
Right. But it's also the plant's major highway for long-distance transport. It moves water and dissolved minerals absorbed by the roots upwards to the leaves, fighting gravity, and it distributes the food compounds, the sugars made in the leaves, downwards to the roots for storage, and outwards to all growing tissues, like fruits and flowers.
A two-way highway.
Pretty much. The stem also has key anatomical waypoints or landmarks, nodes. These are the specific points where leaves or sometimes branches and flowers attach.
Okay.
The segments between these nodes are called internodes. Their length varies a lot, affecting the plant's height and branching pattern, controlling its reach and footprint.
Right.
And at each node, you'll also find axillary buds. These are embryonic shoots, basically dormant expansion points or upgrade slots.
Upgrade slots, huh?
They can activate to sprout new branches, extra leaves, or even flowers. This gives the plant incredible flexibility for strategic growth. It can expand its territory or reach for light, respond to damage.
Ah, so if top gets eaten, a side branch can take over.
Exactly. An axillary bud can quickly become the main growing point, ensuring the plant keeps going. It's all about adaptability.
That explains how plants can recover or branch out so effectively. Okay, let's dive deeper, down to the cellular level. Just like in a complex game with different units having specialized roles, plants have highly specialized cells. Your source mentions three main types, parenchyma, collenchyma, and sclerenchyma. What makes each of these character classes unique? How does their structure dictate function?
This is where we really see the elegance of cellular specialization. Yeah, it's fundamental across all biology, not just plants. Understanding how cell structure fits its job is key to seeing how tissues and organs work in any organism. And these plant cell types, they've evolved very distinct structures for specific roles.
Okay, let's start with parenchyma. They sound common.
They are. Parenchyma cells are often seen as the jack of all trades or the basic worker units of the plant kingdom. They have relatively thin, flexible primary cell walls, good for exchanging stuff, and crucially, they stay alive and metabolically active when mature.
So they're doing active chemistry.
Absolutely. Their living nature means they handle lots of active metabolic processes throughout the plant's life. They're everywhere, making up the bulk of the internal ground tissue, forming the epidermis, the outer skin, even found within the vascular tissues playing support roles.
So these versatile foundational cells, what are their main jobs?
Oh, incredibly diverse functions. If they have chloroplasts, like in the leaf mesophyll, they're the main energy generators, doing most of the photosynthesis.
Okay, photosynthesis, what else?
They act as vital warehouses storing food like starch and water, especially in roots and fleshy fruits. Super important for surviving dormant periods or feeding developing seeds.
Storage, got it.
On the surface, as the epidermis, they're the outer shield, basic protection. They're involved in secretion, making and releasing various substances. And in the phloem, while not the main movers, they help transport sugars.
They really do a bit of everything.
They do. And what's really remarkable with parallels to regenerative medicine is their metabolic plasticity. Unlike many specialized animal cells that lock into one role and die, parenchyma can de-differentiate, become unspecialized again, and then re-differentiate.
Yeah, they can change jobs.
Essentially, yes. If a plant's wounded, these worker cells can revert to a more basic state and then re-specialize to form new protective tissue, or even regenerate whole new organs, like roots from a stem cutting.
Wow.
This adaptability is key to plant resilience and their indeterminate growth. It's like a biological reset button for repair. In a strategy game, they're the villagers or drones, numerous, versatile, building, gathering, farming, storing, repairing, the backbone of the economy and infrastructure.
Okay, so parenchyma are the versatile workers. What about colenchyma?
Ah, colenchyma cells. These are the plant's flexible support beams. They're distinct because they have unevenly thickened primary cell walls, often thickest at the corners. And crucially, they also stay alive at maturity, like parenchyma.
Unevenly thickened,
yeah.
For flexibility.
Exactly. Their main role is providing flexible support, especially in parts that are still growing and elongating young stems, leaf petioles, developing fruit. The uneven thickening gives plasticity and elasticity.
Why is that important?
It's vital for young growing parts that need to bend in the wind or adjust orientation without snapping. If they had uniformly rigid walls early on, growth would be impossible, like trying to inflate a balloon in a rigid box. They allow the plant to have turgor internal pressure for uprightness without being brittle.
So like stretchable rebar or dynamic scaffolding.
Perfect analogy. They provide structural integrity while allowing expansion and movement, unlike rigid supports that would stop growth.
Okay, flexible support, then the really tough ones, sclerenchyma.
Right. Finally, sclerenchyma cells. These are the heavy-duty armor and unyielding pipelines of the plant. They have both a primary wall and a much thicker, often heavily lignified secondary cell wall.
Lignified, meaning with lignin.
Yes. This secondary wall is evenly thickened, unlike colenchyma, and usually impregnated with lignin, a remarkably complex biopolymer. This lignin makes them incredibly rigid, strong, resistant to compression.
And they die when mature.
Usually, yes. A key point is they typically undergo programmed cell death once mature and their structural role is set. They do their job by forming a permanent, fortified structure, and then the living part, the protoplast, degrades, leaving behind just the strong, hollow walls.
So they become the plant's permanent scaffolding or pipelines.
Mm-hmm.
What's so special about this lignin stuff?
Lignin is absolutely crucial. It's a major evolutionary adaptation that allowed plants to grow tall and colonize land successfully. It infiltrates the cellulose walls, cross-linking the fibers, adding immense compressive strength, stiffness, and decay resistance. Think of it like reinforcing concrete with steel rebar.
Making them super tough.
Incredibly tough and durable. This molecular armor provides rigid support to mature plant parts, stopping collapse under weight or from wind. Plus, the main water-conducting cells in xylem vessel members and tracheids are types of sclerenchyma. They form strong, open, dead tubes, perfect for efficient, unobstructed water flow.
So the reinforced concrete walls or solid metal pipes.
Exactly. Once built, they offer permanent, unyielding support and robust conduits for transport, even if the builders, the cells, aren't active anymore. Lignin is the adamantium or vibranium, giving them that incredible strength. Essential for long-term structure and water transport.
That's a powerful analogy. Okay, so these specialized cells don't just float around. They team up to form tissues, like functional modules.
Mm.
Your source mentions primary tissues and how they originate. How does this teamwork lead to the plant's complex structure?
Exactly right. This grouping of specialized cells into tissues is fundamental organization in all multicellular life, us included. All tissues originating from the apical meristems, the growing tips of stems and roots, are called primary tissues.
The initial building blocks.
Precisely. The foundational blueprints. As cells are produced by these meristems and get pushed further back from the tips, they mature and undergo differentiation. They specialize into what we call mature tissues.
And mature means they've reached their final form.
Generally, yes. Cells have reached their final size, taken on their specific shape, and usually don't divide anymore unless there's, say, wound healing. This differentiation is a huge concept in biology, how generalized stem cells or, you know, noob characters gain experience and train to become specialized classes, getting unique skills for specific jobs.
And the meristems orchestrate this.
The apical meristems themselves are the master architects and growth engines. Tiny regions at the very tips of stems and roots, full of continuously dividing embryonic cells. This is where primary growth getting longer happens, pushing upwards for light, downwards for water.
Growth engines, okay.
And what's amazing is that right behind these meristems, the new cells don't just randomly specialize. They differentiate into three primary meristematic regions, each programmed to develop a specific tissue system for the whole plant.
So the meristems are like central command, directing the whole building process from the start.
Precisely. These three regions are, first, the protoderm. It's the outermost primary meristem, producing the dermal tissue system, the outer protective skin, or epidermis. The plant's first line of defense, like a spaceship's hull.
Right, yellow layer.
Second, the ground meristem. This produces the ground tissue system, which makes up the bulk of the plant's interior, filling the space between the dermal and vascular tissues. Includes parenchyma for storage and photosynthesis, collenchyma for flexible support, some sclerenchyma too, the main living space and engine room.
The filler and functional stuff inside.
Right. And finally, the procambium. This central meristem produces the vascular tissue system, the vital transport network, running throughout, connecting everything.
The plumbing and wiring.
Exactly. So, using the gaming analogy again, apical meristems are the core processors or construction yards at the front lines of expansion. They don't just make generic cells, they direct initial specialization into different construction crews, protoderm building the defensive perimeter, ground meristem constructing internal facilities, procambium laying down power and supply lines. Each builds a specific type of structure for the plant base. This coordinated development allows a complex organism like a plant to grow in a highly organized, functional way.
Right, okay. Now let's talk about those power and supply lines. The plant's internal delivery service, the vascular tissue system. This sounds incredibly important, like the supply lines in a grand strategy game. Without them, a big plant couldn't function.
It's absolutely vital, yeah. Without an efficient internal transport system, a large, complex plant just couldn't survive. Imagine running a huge city without roads, pipes, or an electricity grid. It wouldn't work. The vascular tissue system is mainly cylindrical cells stacked together, forming continuous tubes, the plant's highways. These tubes efficiently move water, dissolved minerals, and manufactured food compounds throughout the entire organism, top to bottom. And there are two main types, xylem and phloem, each with a specialized cargo, a main direction of flow, and unique structures.
Okay, let's break those down. Xylem first.
Let's do xylem. This is the plant's dedicated water and mineral pipeline, its primary function. Transport water and dissolved mineral nutrients from the roots, where they're absorbed, upwards through the stem and into every cell of the leaves.
So a one-way upward flow against gravity.
Exactly. Essential for photosynthesis and maintaining cell turgor, keeping the plant from wilting. The main transporting cells in xylem are schrachides and vessel members. These are remarkable cells, usually types of sclerenchyma strong, often dead at maturity, forming continuous hollow tubes.
Dead cells forming tubes.
Yes. Their dead, open nature, plus those lignified walls, allows for highly efficient bulk flow of water. No living contents getting in the way.
That upward movement against gravity is really impressive. How does a tree get water way up to its highest leaves, sometimes hundreds of feet, without a pump like our heart?
Ah, that's one of the most elegant examples of physics in biology. It's explained by the cohesion tension theory. The driving force is actually the sun's energy through transpiration.
Water evaporating from the leaves.
Precisely. As water vapor evaporates from the stomata, it creates a negative pressure, a pulling force, or tension in the xylem. This tension stretches all the way down to the roots because water molecules are incredibly cohesive.
They stick together.
Strongly due to hydrogen bonds. They form a continuous, unbroken column from root to leaf. At the same time, water molecules are adhesive. They stick to the lignified xylem walls, which helps prevent the column from breaking.
So evaporation pulls the whole chain up.
Exactly. Each evaporating water molecule pulls the next one up behind it, like a long molecular chain. It's an elegant, passive system powered by the sun. But it's also vulnerable to things like cavitation air bubbles forming and breaking the chain. Plants constantly battle to maintain this flow.
Fascinating. So if xylem is passive water transport.
Right. Without that upward flow, the plant wilts. Photosynthesis stops. It's game over. In the gaming analogy, xylem is the water pumping station and irrigation system, a one-way pipeline drawing liquid resources from the ground to the production facilities. Trachytes and vessel members are the reinforced pipe segments for maximum flow.
Okay, so what about the other one, phloem?
Then we have phloem. This is the plant's food and energy distribution network. Unlike xylem's typical one-way flow, phloem transports the sugars made during photosynthesis primarily in the leaves, but also from storage to all other parts of the plant, wherever they're needed for growth or energy.
So sending sugar down to roots, up to new leaves, out to fruits?
Exactly. Down to roots for storage, up to developing leaves and flowers, out to developing fruits. The key transporting cells are sieve tube members. They form the actual conduits for the sugar solution, and alongside them are companion cells.
Companion cells, what do they do?
They're metabolically active and essential. They act as support staff, providing the energy and metabolic help needed to actively load and unload sugars into and out of the sieve tubes. Phloem also has parenchyma for storage and sclerenchyma fibers for support, keeping the network intact.
So if xylem is passive one way, phloem sounds much more dynamic and active. Two-way traffic, maybe?
It is much more dynamic, and it is bidirectional. Phloem transport is driven by an active process called pressure flow, or sometimes translocation. Sugars move from a source where they're made or stored in high concentration, like mature leaves or storage roots.
Okay, the sugar factory or warehouse?
To a sink where they're needed or stored in lower concentration, like growing tips, developing fruits, or actively respiring roots.
Where the sugar gets used up or put away?
Right. And this movement is active. Companion cells use energy to actively load sugars into the sieve tubes at the source. This creates a high sugar concentration, which draws water in from nearby xylem by osmosis, building up pressure.
Pressure pushes the sugar solution along.
Exactly. This pressure drives the sugar solution towards areas of lower pressure, the sinks where sugars are being actively unloaded, again with help from companion cells. Mm-hmm. This active energy-using process lets plants efficiently allocate energy resources precisely where needed for growth, development, survival.
And a very targeted delivery.
Extremely. So the game analogy. Phloem is the energy grid or food delivery system. Takes process energy, sugars, from the solar farms, leaves, and dynamically distributes it to every building or unit needing power foundations, roots, new construction projects, growing tips, or developing fruits. Companion cells are the logistics drones, or energy transfer units, actively moving the energy packets, ensuring efficient delivery wherever needed, adapting to the plant's changing needs.
Okay, that distinction between xylem and phloem is clear. Now, how are all these tissues, dermal, ground, vascular, actually arranged?
The layout. Wow. If you visualized a cross-section of a root, stem, or leaf, you'd see a very distinct architecture. It's highly organized for efficiency. The dermal tissue forms the outermost protective layer, like the outer wall or perimeter shield of your base. First line of defense against pathogens, drying out, physical damage.
Okay, this is good.
Then the ground tissue occupies the bulk of the interior. It's the main living space and resource storage areas, housing most general purpose buildings and resources. This is where a lot of metabolic activity like photosynthesis and storage happens.
The internal structure.
And the vascular tissue. It's typically centrally located in roots or arranged in distinct bundles in stems and leaves, forms the internal power conduits and transport hubs, ensuring vital resources get efficiently supplied everywhere. This systematic arrangement is the fundamental base layout or defense strategy, maximizing protection and internal logistics.
Right. Plants aren't static, are they? They're constantly growing, sometimes huge. Your source defines plant growth as production of new cells and cell enlargement. And it differentiates between two main types, primary and secondary growth.
Yeah.
How do these dynamic processes let a plant level up and expand its whole base, not just get resources?
This is where the plant's remarkable developmental plasticity and indeterminate growth really shine. Unlike many animals that stop growing at a certain size, plants often exhibit indeterminate growth in parts like stems and roots, meaning they can keep adding new cells and getting bigger throughout their entire lives, sometimes for decades, even centuries.
Continuous growth. Wow.
Yeah, this continuous growth lets them adapt constantly to their environment, always seeking resources like light above ground or water and minerals below.
Okay, so let's tackle primary growth first. That's about getting longer.
Exactly. Primary growth is responsible for the plant increasing its length. Think of it as the plant's vertical progression or exploration mode, reaching higher for sunlight, delving deeper for water. This type of growth happens exclusively at the apical meristems.
Those growth engines at the tips we talked about.
The very same. Tiny, highly active regions of embryonic, dividing cells at the very ends of shoots and roots. These growth zones constantly produce new cells, pushing the plant longer and deeper.
So the roots are constantly pushing forward underground. How do they protect themselves while doing that? It must be rough down there.
It is. In roots, primary growth is concentrated at the very tip, where the root apical meristem churns out cells. This delicate growing region is protected by a specialized structure called the root cap.
A protective cap.
Yes, and it does more than just protect. The root cap produces a slippery polysaccharide, a slimy layer, which acts like a lubricant or drilling fluid, helps the root push through abrasive soil with minimal friction and damage. Facilitates rapid growth. What's more, cells in the root cap are constantly getting scraped off and replaced by new cells from the meristem right behind it. It's like a self-repairing drill bit. Allows the root to continuously penetrate new soil without getting worn down.
So the gaming analogy for root growth.
Primary root growth is like your underground tunneling unit, constantly extending deeper into the map for resources. The root cap is the reinforced drill head protecting it. The polysaccharide is the biolubricant reducing friction. And the cell replacement is the self-repair mechanism.
Got it. And primary growth in the shoot, extending upwards.
Right. For the shoot apical meristem is that dome-shaped group of dividing cells at the very tip of the apical bud. It's the control center for upward growth, orchestrating new leaves, flowers, branches, basically directing the plant's expansion above ground, increasing surface area for photosynthesis, positioning reproductive parts effectively.
And it also makes those three primary meristems.
Yes, just like the root meristem, it gives rise to the protodome, ground meristem, and procambium. This coordinated production ensures that as the shoot gets longer, new dermal, ground, and vascular tissues form continuously in the right arrangement, maintaining structure and function during upward growth. Think of primary shoot growth like your central tower constantly extending upwards, reaching higher for solar energy, expanding your line of sight. The apical meristem is the auto-building drone at the top, continuously adding new floors and specialized sections like leaves and branches.
Okay, primary growth, getting longer, taller, deeper. But what about getting wider? How does a plant beef up its stem and roots to become a sturdy tree? How does it fortify its defenses and boost internal capacity?
Ah, that's where secondary growth comes in. This is a process primarily seen in woody plants like trees and shrubs, though some non-woody plants do it too. It allows the plant to increase its diameter, effectively bulking up its supporting tissues and dramatically expanding its transport capacity, making stems and roots thicker and stronger over time.
And this needs different meristems. Not the apical ones.
Exactly. This requires a new kind of meristem distinct from the apical ones. These are the lateral meristems. They're cylindrical layers of dividing cells located along the sides of stems and roots, not just at the tips. And the tissues they produce are called secondary tissues.
Okay, lateral meristems for sideways growth. What are they?
There are two main lateral meristems involved, working together, the vascular cambium and the cork cambium.
Vascular cambium. Sounds like it makes more vascular tissue.
Precisely. The vascular cambium is an internal cylinder. It's responsible for producing secondary xylem to the inside. That's what we commonly call wood. And secondary phloem to the outside.
Wood is secondary xylem. Okay.
Yep. Each year, the vascular cambium divides, adding new layers inwards, xylem, and outwards, phloem. This dramatically increases the plant's capacity for water and food transport, essential to support a bigger, taller structure. The buildup of secondary xylem is what gives trees their massive trunks and lets them move water way up high.
And the cork cambium. That sounds like bark.
You got it. The cork cambium is located closer to the surface. It produces bark, the plant's outer protective layer. As the stem gets wider from the vascular cambium's activity, the original epidermis from primary growth just can't stretch enough and would crack.
Right, it would split open.
So the cork cambium replaces it with this new, thicker, more robust, often waterproof protective barrier, the bark. This continuous production of secondary tissues allows for those sturdy, long-lived, woody stems and roots, providing immense structural integrity and huge transport capacity. It's a key adaptation enabling trees and shrubs to become large, enduring organisms.
So, the gaming analogy for secondary growth.
Secondary growth is like initiating a major base expansion project, building walls and towers around your plant base to make it wider, tougher, more defensible. The lateral meristems are specialized construction crews working outwards, The vascular cambium is the internal construction crew, constantly adding new layers of reinforced transport pipes, secondary xylem wood, and supply lines, secondary phloem, inside, making the internal network more robust, supporting more structure and resource flow.
And the cork cambium?
The cork cambium is the outer defense crew, continuously building new, thicker armor plating bark around the expanding base, replacing the older, thinner skin as it grows wider. This dual strategy, vertical expansion primary and horizontal fortification secondary, lets plants achieve incredible size, longevity, and resilience.
Wow, that truly was a deep dive into the world of plants. We've unpacked how these seemingly simple organisms operate with, well, incredible complexity and precision.
It's pretty amazing stuff.
We learned about the foundational root and shoot systems, each a marvel of engineering with specialized organs like leaves and stems, perfectly designed for specific missions, photosynthesis, resource transport.
Mm-hmm, that division of labor.
We explored the character classes of plant cells, Peronica, Golenchyma, Sclerenchyma, each with unique abilities tailored for their roles, from versatile metabolic work to flexible and rigid support.
The building blocks.
And we discovered how these specialized cells team up to form tissues, building the plant's modules, and how the vascular system acts as its vital logistics network via xylem and phloem, ensuring all parts are connected and supplied, even against gravity.
That internal transport is key.
Finally, we saw the dynamic leveling up processes of primary and secondary growth, allowing plants to expand in length and girth throughout their remarkably long lives.
Growing and adapting continuously.
So what's the big takeaway here, especially for someone heading towards medicine?
What stands out and what's profoundly relevant for your aspiring medical career is that even though we focused on plants, the underlying biological principles are universal.
Like specialization, organization.
Exactly. Specialization of cells, their organization into tissues and organs, the intricate transport of resources, dynamic, regulated growth processes for adaptation. These are the very same principles, the fundamental game mechanics you'll encounter when you study the human body.
Ah, okay. So studying plants helps understand humans.
Absolutely. Think about how our own stem cells differentiate into muscle, nerve, bone. How our circulatory system works like a vascular network delivering nutrients and oxygen. How our bones grow and remodel. Mm. Understanding these fundamental patterns and biological design in one system, like plants, really sharpens your analytical ability, your intuition, for grasping them in another more complex system, like humans.
It's about recognizing the patterns.
Exactly. Recognizing the elegant, recurrent solutions nature provides to solve similar biological challenges across different forms of life.
So the next time you see a tree, you're not just looking at something green and static, but a masterclass in biological engineering, a living superstructure that's been optimizing its resource management and growth strategy for millions of years. This holistic view, seeing the elegant solutions across different life forms, is what makes biology so endlessly fascinating and, crucially, so foundational for a career in medicine. It really expands your perspective on how life itself functions.
It does. And it raises interesting questions, too. Here's one for you to consider. Given the immense structural strength and durability provided by lignin in plant sclerenchyma cells, imagine the challenges and potential benefits if human tissues, maybe bone or cartilage, could naturally incorporate similar hardening mechanisms in a regulated way, perhaps in response to stress or damage.
Oh, like naturally reinforced bone.
Maybe. What might that mean for enhanced bone repair or developing new biomaterials or even disease resistance? But also, what would be the inherent trade-offs? What about flexibility, metabolic cost? The risk of things becoming too rigid.
A truly thought-provoking challenge. Yeah, pushing the boundaries. Something to chew on as you continue your own journey of growth and discovery. Until next time, keep digging deeper.